Hey, Marketplace listeners, you know, around here, we like to think you're never too young to learn about the economy and financial basics. That's why we're bringing the Million Bazillion Live Tour to schools to teach important lessons about budgeting, investing, saving, and more. It's all the fun of the podcast, but now live, immersive, and interactive. Special thanks to our tour partner, Greenlight, the debit card and money app for kids and teens. Learn more about Greenlight at greenlight.com/million. That is greenlight.com/million.
Yeah, let's rock it.
Born ready, yo. Born ready.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Make Me Smart. Happy Monday. It is the daily show where we do what we can to make today make sense. I like our little under-promise there. We do what we can.
Well, you know, we're no dope. We've been doing this for a while now.
Exactly.
Let's make sure everybody knows exactly what they're getting. I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is, as Molly said, it's Monday. You know the drill. We're going to do a little bit of news, a little bit of make me smile. And then we're out of your hair in like 15 minutes if we do this right.
Just so like that. Pew, pew, pew.
Boom.
It is, you may have noticed, either the first day of March or the day that the snake ate its own tail of March, because in some ways we never left March of 2019. It's a Ouroboros March, which is
I remember learning what an Ouroboros was like 18 months ago. It was the first time. I'm like, oh my God, that's what that thing is.
It is the coolest. And it's so useful as a metaphor. I mean, yeah, it is it's a good one. It's a good one. The snake that eats its own tail, everyone, like, look it up. Look all the images up. You're going to want to get a tattoo. You won't be alone. especially after the year that we have just had. I know like three people with Ouroboros tattoos. Maybe it's my crowd. So, but what is interesting is that, of course, this is starting the process of introspection. It's like we've circled all the way back to March. In some ways, little has changed. In some ways, everything is about to change. We're arguably like at the inflection point where the end really truly is in sight. And now we're all starting to think about it. You have thoughts? You don't think we're going to get there?
Well,
tell me. Just say it.
Well, so look, I know I'm like the downer all the time, but I'm sure you heard the director of the CDC say this weekend, we're seeing an uptick again in cases. We had a huge plummet, and that's awesome, but now we're seeing the uptick. And my whole mantra this whole year has been, do not get overexcited. Do not get overexcited. Kids are not going back to school until the fall of 2021. Deal with that. If it comes earlier, that's great. And I want to maintain my expectations, right? That's the thing.
So I did see that, and I will recommend to you, and I went to find it so I can send it to our Bits and Bytes producer, Tony Wagner, because Alexis Madrigal at The Atlantic,
yes,
who was one of the co-starters of the COVID tracking project when the government wasn't doing a very good job, was basically like, whoa, whoa. I don't think deaths at this exact moment are rising. I think some states are reconciling their death certificates, he wrote, with their existing counts and ending up reporting large backlogs. It means the peak of the surge may have been worse than we knew, but it doesn't necessarily mean that deaths right this second are rising. And yes, possibly I am trying to cling to any shred of optimism, because I also read that Zeynep Tufekci, really long piece in The Atlantic, that was like, look, we keep making the same mistakes over and over. And one of the mistakes we're making is not celebrating our wins. Like the vaccines, as we have said on the show, are a damn miracle. A miracle. And they're here in a phenomenal amount of time and they're rolling out.
But every time we have promise, Americans step in it, right? I mean, how many times have we gone, oh, yay, oh, crap, you know? And look, so I saw what Alexis wrote, and I didn't have the stomach to read all of Zeynep's thing just because I don't have that attention span anymore. Squirrel. But I did see what Alexis wrote, and I took a little hope on that, and I'm trying to just be so steady state. That's what I'm trying to do.
I think that is very wise. Probably. Right. Okay. But I'm also leaning into the hope part. And I also read that, I mean, I know that we're all hot and cold in the extreme on Nate Silver, but he was tweeting this weekend too and saying, you know, we really do appear to be at an inflection point with vaccine distribution where by the end of April, by his math, we could have 70% of Americans vaccinated.
Yep.
I mean,
which would be huge for sure.
we are making progress. How about that? We are making progress. One of the things, though, that I found so interesting in the beginning of our like period of retrospection here, and actually, which feeds right into your Americans stepping in it narrative, both of which are true, was this great piece over the weekend by Jamel Hill about how Americans, in fact, did not need sports after all. It appears.
Oh,
she wrote this.
Oh, yeah.
In the Atlantic.
So this is your thing. This is your news thing. So tell me about that, because I did not see this.
This is my
piece.
News thing. Exactly. It's such an interesting piece. And, you know, remember, we had this conversation and we were talking about it. And I was like, yeah, I just can't be bothered. It like does nothing for me. It is not an escape. It feels so trivial and dumb. And I've just like let go of all the love I ever had for sports. And turns out I am not alone. And in this piece, she notes that the ratings for big sports events have just been like, like the deepest depths of the toilet, like not even like a regular toilet, like one of those really scary outhouses where you just try not to look down. Down 51% for the NBA finals, which were in October instead of June or whatever. 61% off for the NHL finals. That Super Bowl, which everybody thought was, I mean, it was like, dude, you have Tom Brady against Patrick Mahomes, who's this little genius and whatever. Lowest ratings in 15 years. The Kentucky Derby ratings were down 49%. And this is when people are at home, not doing anything, binging everything else, can't be bothered with sports. And what she writes, and I think this is really interesting, is that even though nobody's watching, there was this big argument that like, well, Americans need sports, right? We got to get football back because this is that we need it. And it turns out that not only are Americans not interested in it, that that means we have put players at risk, the fans that we've let in, the staffs of all of these teams.
Oh, yeah.
And that now they're, you know, going to apparently have the All-Star game in Atlanta, even though players up to and including LeBron James are like, dude, no, this is profoundly unnecessary. And, you know, Atlanta's mayor, Keisha Lance Bottoms, is like, please don't come here. Please don't come here for this big, stupid party that we don't need to be having that nobody's even going to watch.
Yeah. So this one gets filed under the capitalism doesn't care if you live or die file because sports is, after all, a multi-bajillion dollar business in this economy. So that's item one. Item two is, I wonder what we're filling all the time with. Like, what did the other 49% of the people, well, that's not a correct analogy. What did all the people who weren't watching sports do?
Yeah,
I don't curiosity.
Too.
Don't know. Yeah.
Because these are long, you know, football's a lot of hours. That's exactly what's going on.
Yes, yes, it is.
Yeah. And it's contractual, right? These players have to. She writes about how there was one game in late November where the Denver Broncos actually had to play a game against the New Orleans Saints without any quarterbacks.
Yeah.
Because all the quarterbacks from each team were somehow on COVID protocol lockdown.
Right.
It is absurd. It is a uniquely gross American sports story in the extreme, not to bring us down. After my optimism.
Well, I wonder. Well, hold on. I don't know if it's uniquely American, right? I wonder what the English Premier League is doing. I wonder what their ratings have been like, and I wonder what their protocols are like, and whether they've had to cancel. That's the only one I can think of at the moment. I wonder if like Japanese baseball, did they do baseball this past year? I don't know.
Cricket.
Anyway,
I don't know.
Somebody out there knows cricket, right? Yeah. Who knows? Anyway.
What's up with cricket?
Yeah.
Email
no, that's
us.
Good. I very first radio feature story I ever did was on the World Championship of Cricket. Anyway.
Really?
Yeah, totally true. It was in Fremont, California. Obviously the world championships were somewhere else, but there's a huge Indian community in Fremont, California. So I got out of bed at midnight. I was like some radio newbie. Went down there and spent the middle of the night watching cricket and did a radio story out of it. Anyway, whatever. That's just me rambling.
I'm going to look up the
back
Premier
to the
League. Well,
here,
yeah,
we?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Tell me your news.
So I have two things. One is substantive, and the other one is just a follow-up. I am pleased to note that either Senator Sanders and Senator Wyden or their staffs listen to this podcast because this weekend, following my recommendation on the Friday show, they decided not to mess with the tax code to get the minimum wage thing passed. So that's item number one. Although I am now seeing on my Twitter feed as it goes by, as we sit here talking at each other, that Bernie Sanders just said on Capitol Hill he thinks that the Democrats ought to overrule the parliamentarian on getting the minimum wage into the COVID relief bill in the Senate. So this fight is not yet done for Senator Sanders. Item number two, and this was a cray-cray story. It was in the New York Times a couple of days ago, David Sanger and Emily Schmall, a story about how China planted some malware into India's power grid in retaliation for border skirmishes that the two countries are and have been having for years up in the mountainous regions of northern India. Anyway, China planted malware in the Indian electricity grid and had brownouts and messed with it. And apparently, Sanger and Schmall write, it basically was, hey, that's a nice power grid you got. It'd be a shame if something happened to it. It was amazing. It was amazing. Yeah. And look,
horrible.
I mean, we've talked about this and horrible, right? And all this stuff. But look, cyber warfare now is a weapon of mass destruction.
Yep.
Right? That's what this is. And we've had the solar flare hack and all of those other things. And I just don't think we're really thinking about this. And thank God for David Sanger and Emily Schmall in the New York Times, because they've been on top of a bunch of these stories. And this one's wild. So read it. It's cray cray. And oh, by the way, it could happen to us tomorrow and we'd be defenseless. See also.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Solar winds.
Solar winds. Sorry. Not
no problem.
Solar flare,
I got you. I said March 2019 earlier. Apparently, I was literally trying to rewind all the way to happier times. It was just March 2020. March 2020. We had Nicole Perlroth, actually, who just, released her book called, This Is How They Tell Me the World Ends. And she said these are among her, the water stuff in particular is like her worst fear. But this infrastructure stuff, I mean, really, cybersecurity and even just longtime defense officials are starting to talk about whether we're going to need a new, like an updated version of the war code, right? The code of conduct, the international agreement that says you can't, because they shut down the power for the city of Mumbai, 20 million people.
Right.
During a coronavirus outbreak, and hospitals had to go to generators. Like, that's, you know, somebody I actually saw tweeted that and had highlighted that paragraph and said, like, isn't this a war crime?
Right.
Because kind of, but, and there are conversations about international standards that would make it a war crime because,
And we're still here, you know, not to make light of this at all, but we're still here, you know, worried about nuclear weapons treaties while all this stuff is happening, which could happen like in the blink of an eye, you know?
We really need to up our game on this situation. Badly.
Yes.
Now, please.
All right, shall we? We're blathering here. Hit us, Ben, and then we will move briskly on and make a smile and get out of the way. So I saw yours and almost picked it. I'm glad you mentioned it, though. It's awesome.
Yay, good. I basically have just been sick. Probably some news happened today, but I don't care because I've been saving both of these stories since, like, Saturday. I don't care. I'm not interested. Great story from the academictimes.com about, published actually on February 25th, about the first vaccine built on that technology, the pandemic-driven, the RNA, right? Messenger RNA technology that has produced the first two vaccines against COVID. But this one fully immunizes against malaria.
Yeah.
Boom. Like in our prediction show, I said, I really think this is one of the things that this is the start of a medical breakthrough, like generation. And here we are. And malaria, just as a reminder, consistently one of the leading causes of death around the world. It doesn't have an effective vaccine. Yep. And perhaps it seems now it does. They said it is probably the highest level of protection that has been seen in a mouse model. So get that sucker into humans because that is freaking great.
Yep. I think it's super cool.
Yep.
Super, super cool.
So cool.
Okay. Mine also cool in a different way. There's going to be a big announcement tomorrow by the Educating for American Democracy Initiative, in which they are going to call for massive spending on a social studies and civic education program for K-12 students in this country. And I'm just going to quote the Washington Post. A diverse collection of academics, historians, teachers, school administrators, and state education leaders is proposing an overhaul of the way civics and history is taught to American K-12 students. And if you have gained anything from listening to this podcast for the past year on a daily basis or the past 4+ years on a weekly basis, you will know that Molly and I both believe, I'm going to speak for you here, boss, that we have failed in helping people understand what is at risk if civics education is not taught in this country. We talked about it for the whole Trump administration. Hopefully we don't have to talk about it in the Biden administration. But this could be huge. And I would like to say I'm in favor of this. That's it.
Yes. Thank you for speaking me on this me because you are correct. And this let it happen.
Yeah.
You know, it is like this is a really interesting unintended consequences 1-2 that we have put together here, because
people
are paying attention now all of a sudden, and they know they're talking about the filibuster and the rules of society and how it works. And I'm actually seeing, just as a side note, all these tech people who, you know, San Francisco has been such a weird city for so long because it almost felt like you just had people who were living like parallel digital lives. They were not plugged into the city that they lived in at all. Well, now they are, and they're tweeting about the school board and the attorney general his thoughts on incarceration. Like, there is this kind of pronounced increase in interest in government that can only lead to good things. I agree.
Good.
Yep.
Amen.
Love this.
Boom.
See? Excellent. And that's it.
There we go.
Just like we said.
Yeah.
15 minutes. Tomorrow, I'm actually excited for the show because this is also really relevant. We will be back with a deep dive on employment in America, basically what happened to it and what it means for our future, that we kind of don't have jobs like the way we used to think about jobs at all anymore. And good news, there's a whole podcast about it from us, The Uncertain Hour. They're focusing on that. We're going to talk with producer Peter Ballin and Rosen. In the meantime, questions, comments, thoughts, make me smart answers. Make me smart at marketplace.org. Phew.
Phew. Phew, phew, phew.
Sometimes I can't believe how much we get into this show. Make Me Smart is produced by Marissa Cabrera, who, can I just take a moment to say, is so great. So silently, amazingly great at her job that I'm just going to say it out loud.
As long as we're doing this, let's say it out loud, right? She joined us in the middle of a pandemic. We've never set eyes on each other except through a freaking television Zoom thing. And she's killing it.
Killing it. The bits and bytes guy is Tony Wagner. Erica Phillips is just like the keyboard wizard writing the newsletter. The Make Me Smart explainer is just turning stuff out left and right, writing all the things. Boom.
Ben Tolliday was pushing the buttons down in the studio downtown. He composed our theme music along with one Daniel Ramirez. The senior producer is Donna Tam. The executive director of On Demand is Tarn Yevans. And there you have it.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.